Home team still perfect in the Big Ten. Top five teams 0-3 on the road in conference play. Celebrating an upset over number three.
It's Cofield and Company.
Now they say he got a reindeer for the sleigh he's driving here. But how the f*** he go if it doesn't snow on Christmas this year? All right, I got a treat for you. Listen to these kids. Are they great? Beautiful, beautiful. These kids are great or what?
Nothing says Christmas like Joe Pesci and a bunch of F-bombs.
Is that Joe Pesci?
He's great.
I was joking. I was literally going to come back and be like, is that Joe Pesci?
Yeah, it's Pesci.
So that is Joe Pesci.
Pesci on Christmas. What's the problem?
That's a thing.
It is on this show.
No, seriously. That was Joe Pesci.
That was really Joe Pesci, yes.
There is a thing of Joe Pesci singing Christmas songs.
Yeah, he's talking about what's fat ass going to do if it doesn't snow. The sleigh's not going to move.
This is incredible. You've enriched my life. I never knew this existed. This is like that. There was a viral video yesterday on Twitter of how to wrap a gift. Turning it diagonal and you know what I'm talking about, Ari.
That was crazy.
Yeah, and you know what I'm talking about. Thank you. You just did that equivalent back-to-back days of me not knowing something existed, making my life infinitely better in just a few short minutes. It's incredible.
I think it was. I want to give a shout out to someone who reminded me yesterday to do the Pesci Christmas song, but I'll find it. I don't want to blow it. But that was actually thanks to a tweeter. Who listened to the show. McKinnell's here. It's Cofield. Joe Esposito's coming up in less than 10 minutes on college basketball. We're going to try to track down Larry Kostowiak a little later in the hour, the Utah coach. But tomorrow's signing day around college football. This is weird timing when, you know, you've got all these guys taking over jobs, like Kalen DeBoer just took over the Fresno job. What the hell do you do this, you know, this last week? Caleb Herring's with us, football analyst on radio for the Rebels. Caleb?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing? I was enjoying the Pesci conversation.
Right?
And, you know,
I don't know if you want to play that song around the kid, I'll be honest with you, because we had to beep out a couple of words there.
it is, Home Alone is, you know, one of those things, so I think he is involved with the holiday season now, whether you want to be or not.
Oh, yeah, we watched Home Alone the other night. He's brilliant in that. All right, first of all, what was your impression? And again, all this is a press conference. You don't get to find out a whole lot about a new coach beyond, you know, what they say, how they deliver it. I thought Marcus Arroyo did well in the press conference. What do you think?
Well, I agree. I think he did very well. He hit some key points that I think are good to hear. We'll see how much they develop in the future as far as hitting on re-recruiting the guys that are already in the program, the keys of accountability and toughness being pillars of what Rebel football will be about under the new regime. So those kind of things are the right things to say. I think the overall mood and feeling was very receptive and very positive. Of course, some questions were asked that, you know, should have been asked, and I think he handled them the right way. And I think he exuded some leadership that I think a lot of people maybe were questioning as never being a head coach. He handled the press conference like a head coach should, and I think that's a positive feeling. But like you said, there's a lot to be discovered and a lot to find out still as signing day is approaching, and you know, the staff isn't fully hired yet. There's some big questions still going into the beginning of his coaching tenure here.
Wait, I got to get your take on what was the question that he shouldn't have been asked? Was it the one about would you take the job without the facilities?
Oh, no. I said should have.
Should have. Okay.
That question should have been asked. I think it was the right question and the angle on that to asking about that, because the facilities are a draw. And if they were a draw for a coach to come, then you can bet there'd be a draw for a player to come. So I think that question was warranted. It was a good question, and he gave the right answer. And I think there's some debate as if it was the politically correct answer or not by him saying, you know, that yes, he would have taken the job without the facilities. But you know, there definitely is some information there. I think the facilities had a lot to do with why he came.
Play along here. Shocker comes down the pike next week. Marcus Arroyo has named Caleb Herring the offensive coordinator at UNLV. First question to you is, hey, which quarterback are you going to build this offense around? Who is it?
Oh, my goodness. Wow, that is a question for the ages. I honestly, my style of quarterbacking, I would lean towards Kenny Noblad to honestly build the program around. Now,
by the way, who else is in the mix? Who do you think will still be on the roster besides Noblad?
Well, I'm assuming that Armani Rodgers is the other of the two quarterbacks. And if it's not Armani, it's definitely Kenyon. I don't think there's anybody else that I would go substitute Kenyon for at this point, other than Armani Rodgers. It'd be those two, one and two. I think personally, for my style, what I would want to do with an offense, Kenyon Oblad would get the start. And that doesn't mean that it wouldn't be a competitive thing, but just based on the pieces that I have in play that I know are you know, there, I would probably lean towards giving an offense tailored to Kenyon Oblad.
Okay. You know, your answer could be, I'm not sure. I don't know if we have the quarterback I want on the roster.
That could be the answer. And that is, you know, a potential question there. But like I said, with the pieces that I know I have in place, I would probably lean towards Kenyon. And with the commit that we don't know will be a part of the recruiting class for next season, with the commit that's pending, I still would say Kenyon Oblad, because I'd say the youth of a new quarterback at this point, I would rather roll the dice on somebody who's done it before, at least for a year, than somebody that's brand new to the program.
If you're Marcus Arroyo, what do you do on defense? You can go quick fix route and take on lots of JUCOs. Tony Sanchez did that the last couple of years. I don't know if it paid off great dividends. What would you do about the defense? You just kind of suck it up and deal with what you have? And that's not to say they don't have any building blocks. They do. But what would you do?
Well, I think that's it. With the building blocks that they have, I think you can have a competitive defense. And I'm not saying you're going to pitch shutouts, and I don't think anybody should have that expectation. Whether or not you go the JUCO route and recruit for the now, I think you still won't have a defense that's going to be, you know, you're going to win games with your defense. I think right now the play is to strengthen your offense for the now and focus on, you know, putting up 30 points a game. Maybe that's a more attainable goal right now with the tools that you have in the toolbox at UNLV, and then building your defense for the long game. Maybe 3-4 years down the road, having a defense that you kind of constructed the way that you want to. I think for right now, you have the pieces available to you, and maybe you can, you know, get a couple of pieces added during this recruiting season to say we can be a respectable defense. We can have a scheme that will keep us in the contention for the game, and but we're just going to plan on outscoring you for this season and for the foreseen future, and then build your defense the right way, the way you want it, and construct it for the long game.
Caleb, you were talking about the long game now. It's obviously not in reference to Coach Arroyo, but we will flip back to Coach Arroyo in talking about the long game. What type of grace period do you think Coach has in terms of wins and losses, and in terms of when the noise surrounding this program might start mounting if the results aren't what fans want?
Well, this, I think, unfortunately for Coach Arroyo, I think he's probably one of the biggest hires that the program's had in recent history. Yeah. But unfortunately, I think he's got the shortest leash of the most recent hires, is because he is now has no excuse. I think the biggest excuse for the Rebel football program was that the community has invested. We can't be competitive as far as recruiting because of the facilities, and it takes a lot more to build a program. I think he is the first coach that's coming into a foundation at least. So I think he's got a little bit shorter of a leash than most of the coaches have had in the past, at least from the public perception of what should be happening, when the wins should start rolling in. I think with the new stadium, the expectation is to have a good product on a good field and in a good stadium. With his brand new facility, public perception is going to say he has a shorter leash, a much shorter leash, maybe a couple years to turn the Rebel program into a winning program at least. And the expectation of what a winning program is, I think, up for debate. I think some people have the expectation to be, you know, competing for the top bowl games and all this, Mountain West Conference championships and things like that. I think realistically, the expectation can be over the next couple of years that we're a 6-7 win team, in bowl contention every season, and then going from there. I think that's a realistic expectation for the next couple of years. But again, public perception puts his leash a lot shorter than I think coaches in the past have been.
Caleb, what do you think about the penalties handed down by the Mountain West Conference to Faolo and Noah Bean? Obviously, Polu and Austria, it doesn't matter. They're done as seniors. But how about the other two?
Right. So those two, I think, you know, for Faolo especially, I think he can really consider himself lucky that the suspension was what it was. I think, obviously, both teams should deserve punishment. Faolo in that helmet, it was one of those things where it's dicey. Based on what the NFL did with Garrett and things like that, swinging a helmet, you know, the use of a deadly weapon, I think, is essentially how that's being looked at on multiple levels. So two-game suspension is, I think, you know, he should be fortunate and count this as a blessing that he's not getting a more severe punishment. I do think that there was some, I guess, there's a little bit of confusion, I guess, with how these punishments work. I think it's because Reno has the bowl game still, and that is accounting to how their players are punished. But a lot of people were looking at the fact that the person that started the fight, all these other incidents are kind of a domino effect of that, and he should have been punished the most. And I tend to not agree with that. I think just because he started doesn't mean the actions after it weren't worse or more egregious. I think if just looking at each little incident and each person's involvement inside of a vacuum, I think you say Giovanni got out lucky with what he got with the two-game suspension, but the conference has spoken, and the punishments are what they are. And I think if you want to talk about accountability and toughness being pillars, this is a chance to prove, I think, for Coach Arroyo that accountability is one of those things. And holding players accountable for their actions on the field or off the field or after the game is I think, a part of this deal. And you got to live with those consequences if you're any of the players involved.
Last one. The timing on this is really interesting for these coaches who are coming in, like Arroyo. You've got commits from the previous staff. What would you do if you're Arroyo with these 11 verbal commits?
I'd say it's a tough thing because I'm sure 6 of the 11 commits are from California, which is, you know, from all accounts, where Arroyo was heavy in his recruiting at Oregon. So I'm sure these names have popped across his radar or he knows something about them, if not all of the recruits that have been committed, that have committed to UNLV. So he may have his own background and his own opinion on their worth or their value, and that's up for him to decide. And whoever is going to be on the staff as a recruiting coordinator obviously will have some input on that. And it was Coach Seth Kremer was a recruiting coordinator for Tony Sanchez, so I'm sure his input's probably being solicited as far as what to do. But I think there's some value in some of the players, and it just all depends on what direction we want to go. I think earlier we talked about if you want to rebuild the defense for now, and if you look at the commits, there's not really any defensive players of note that will be impactful. A couple of kids from Vegas are defensive guys, but I think only 3 guys were listed as defensive players, the cornerback, an outside linebacker, and a defensive tackle. So maybe those needs and that necessity and those recruits don't line up with what Coach Arroyo wants to do with his first recruiting class. And then this is kind of the draw of being in transition during this period, and why a hire immediately after the season, if you're going to change directions, is kind of warranted. And the extended wait for getting Coach Roy into this position kind of hurts him in a sense. It's kind of unfair to him to then put together a recruiting class or get the most accurate look at the current commits in this short time frame. So I'm not sure how you go about approaching that, but it's going to be all dependent on how he sees these players, those 11 players that have committed already to this point, how they fit into his scheme of what he wants Rebel football to be. And if he decides to keep pulling the trigger or pursue them actively, or to go a different direction. But it seems like, you know, a bit of a crunch to try to get any new recruits in. So it looks like February is going to be a time to really put the rubber road on this recruiting journey.
Caleb, good job. And especially thanks for the work you did at the introductory conference. Thank you.
No problem, guys. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
There you go. Caleb Herring, former Rebel quarterback, does the analysis on radio. Joe Esposito is coming up. We'll turn the page to a little college basketball. Big week of college basketball here in Vegas. Kentucky is here like all week.
Join the conversation on Twitter at Cofield & Co.
Are you ready to air your ESPN Las Vegas grievances? Festivus comes this Friday on Cofield & Company.
It's Dominic the Donkey, jingity-jing, the Italian Christmas donkey.
The best, Lou Monty.
Okay.
In the old days when we had records, my parents had the 33.
When he could still say Merry Christmas.
I don't do that. That's ridiculous.
I know, I'm kidding.
But that whole thing is nuts. Everyone whining about.
Yes, it is.
So I forget who walked up to me yesterday. They were like, "What can I say?" I'm like, "I say whatever you want. I don't care."
I grew up listening to Sabbath, Slayer, and Metallica. I'm basically a devil worshiper, and I've been saying Merry Christmas for 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Yeah, it's a phony issue.
It is a phony issue.
Let's move on.
Yes, Joe Esposito's in. I do want to mention, though, we're going to do our Sky Diamonds qualifier giveaway of Disney on Ice tickets around 5:35, 5:40. So stick around. You'll hear a sounder. Ari will take your call at that point, and you'll be in the running for a $1,000 gift card from Sky Diamonds down at Town Square. So you hear the voice of a former college basketball assistant, Joe Esposito. We're trying to hook up with Coach K the other one, Larry Krystkowiak, who's at Utah, as Utah's playing Kentucky in town tomorrow night. But, Joe, I wanted to ask you, sort of piggybacking what we were just talking about with Caleb Herring on the football front, this Marcus Arroyo's coming in as UNLV head coach. He's got commits, verbals, for 11 players. But they're not your players. So, in basketball, what do you do if you have a new job? What does the staff do when you got short notice? Maybe not this short, but the other staff had commits. Maybe you don't want them. What do you do?
You know, we had it happen a bunch. You know, we did it at Minnesota, Texas Tech, Memphis. You know, I can remember the first day we took the Memphis job. We got on a plane and went out and went to see Charlie Moore. I mean, you got to go re-recruit those kids. I mean, they made a decision to come to your university. They made a decision to come to your school. And I get it, the coach is gone, but at least go find out what's going on, hear from the new coach, and give him a chance.
Why is that?
Well, it's just common courtesy. Yeah. I mean, I think
it
comes around.
It
sure can. You know, the coaches have a lot of say. You know, NBA coaches are going to call. NBA GMs are going to call and say, what was this kid like? He was on your roster. He committed to your school. Why didn't he stay? Those are important things to remember.
How about the other way? The other coaches who have a lot of influence are high school coaches and the AAU people.
Sure.
You burn a kid in basketball that you took that the previous staff took a commit from,
it could
at least talk to them.
No question. It could definitely hurt you. It hurts you in the long term for years and years because maybe you'll never get a kid from Atlanta. Maybe you'll never get a kid from Chicago. Then what happens with your recruiting? So you got to be really, really careful. You got to be really, really delicate. And I think the most important thing is to be honest with those young men. If you don't think they can play for you, tell them out front. You know, just say, hey, I don't think you fit my style. And I think then they'll move on.
How is the process different when you are trying to re-recruit someone or keep someone to stay as opposed to the other visits you might have?
Well, I think that the visit's different because you got to convince them now to play for you as opposed to your introducing your program.
So how does that change your mindset as a recruiter?
Well, my mindset was always to go in there and say, hey, look, if we really want the kid, now you know when you go in that house,
sure,
if they've already committed to your school, if you want them or not. Now, if you really do want them, well, now you got to sell yourself and your program. They already like your school. They like your facilities. They like your strength coach. They've already seen all that.
Sure.
But now they got to like you. And that's a big part of this college basketball. That's a whole thing about kids transferring. We'll talk about later. But there's so many things in college basketball going on right now with that portal and everything else where kids are leaving. And it's like it's getting ridiculous. So I think as a new coach, the best thing you do, and you want to make people happy. Especially, I don't know how much about football, though, is a lot of local recruits. I mean, if you look at rosters, football teams in Texas have Texas players. Football team in Minnesota, they have Minnesota players. Team in Las Vegas, they have a lot of Las Vegas players. You don't want to get people upset in the beginning by just getting rid of people. So you want to go see those people and see if it fits.
So one of my loves of college football, or check that, of college basketball versus college football, is that you're allowed to schedule aggressively and it doesn't kill you unless you lose every single game. In college basketball, you're rewarded for it down the road. But boy, oh boy, if injuries hit at the wrong time and you're North Carolina has lost Cole Anthony. He's down 4 to 6 weeks. You ready for this? They're 6-4 right now. They may enter 2020 at 6-7. So here's what's coming up, Joe. No Cole Anthony.
Wow.
They're doing a West Coast trip. They're going to be here in Vegas on Saturday to take on UCLA. Struggling as well, but, you know, no Cole Anthony. That's a good game, UCLA and North Carolina. Tomorrow night, they're playing Gonzaga. And by the way, this is a sleeper game. They will host on the 30th Yale. So they could lose all three games without Cole Anthony.
And they just may. You know, if I'm Roy Williams, I pull that Tom Steyer guy. I call a state of emergency. I just the program is in state of emergency.
We need to change the future of the North Carolina program.
There's no doubt. We are in a state of emergency.
We have to
at this
save
point.
The program. That's what it
is. I mean, he's out indefinitely. He just had that scope on his meniscus. He's averaging 19 points a game. He's the second leading freshman scorer in the country behind Anthony Edwards, who's a heck of a player at 19.8. I mean, they lose to Wofford. Now, that Wofford thing's crazy because they scheduled three games against them and they lost two of them. So that I don't know who's the scheduling coach there, but maybe there's a job open for me next year.
Roy's going to flip out.
Yeah,
it's your fault.
Someone's going to flip out. I mean, you lose to Wofford twice. Now, nothing against disrespect to Wofford. They've always been a good program.
Yeah.
But to go into Chapel Hill and win, and this game was actually on a neutral site. They play at the old Carmichael Arena, which they used to play at years ago. They haven't played in that building since 1986.
Hated that building. Hated watching games on that building with that. The stupid scoreboard, the little flippy scoreboard in the corner. And for some reason, growing up, I liked Maryland, right? And I used to have to watch North Carolina and Maryland at Carmichael as they ran the four-corner nonsense.
Yeah, it was fun to watch.
Right?
That was fun.
Have a 10-point lead. You know, the game's in the 40s. There's 9 minutes left, and Dean's like, I'm gonna waste 7 minutes here.
Just stalling away.
Yep.
But, you know, the guy that might be taking his place now is going to be Kenny Smith's son, KJ Smith. He was a walk-on. He's at North Carolina now. And, you know, the last game they had, Leaky Black was out. And then it was kind of like a pity party. They said, well, we lost Sterling Manley, too. Well, he was averaging 3 points and three rebounds.
Right.
So they're in trouble.
All right. Pity party get even worse, though? Is there any way Greg Anthony talks to his kid and he's like, listen, you're out 4 to 6 weeks. You're not back until the end of February. What's the freaking point? You've already proven – this is kind of a Zion thing all over again. You've already proven what you need to. You could be a top 10 pick. Don't risk the knee if it's not 100%. You can't risk your future.
In this case, it might happen. And the reason I say that is because the team isn't going to be competing for a national championship. I think the other way with Zion, they had a shot. I think with the Wiseman kid at Memphis, I mean, he's still not playing. And they've actually won every game without him. And he's probably the number one pick in the draft in my eyes. I think that they may have to think about Cole Anthony's situation when you start playing around your knee. And he's already going to be a top five pick. I think they have him right now in some of the mock drafts at 3 or 4. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with his dad and what they decide to do.
So something that's not spoken about enough on the national level is right now is generally the, we'll call it, well, I was going to say break. It's academics time, right? So generally the schedule gets a little lighter. You got to finish out the semester and your academics. But also what can happen here, Joe, is kids look at where they are in a roster and they're like, you know what, mid-year transfer time. Time to go into the portal. So Charles O'Bannon, Bishop Gorman guy, Vegas guy, had UNLV on the list when he chose to go to USC. He hasn't played. So he's in the portal.
Yeah.
That's a good thing, right? He can go somewhere else and play, Joe.
Yeah, it's a good thing. But, you know, when I think about the portal, I think about a porta potty. You ever walk in one of those things? They're disgusting. They make you
stop.
Sick.
The portal's not that bad.
Oh, it's bad. It's bad. I don't know what porta potties you're going into, but you look into that porta potty and there's a lot of garbage in that hole. I'm gonna tell you that right now. And I think that it's a way. They designed it to make the student athlete have more control. And I think what it's designed to do is teach kids how to quit. I really do. I think all of a sudden things aren't going so good and your girlfriend's upset because you're not starting and mom and dad are upset and you're going to just quit. You made a commitment to that school. The old-fashioned way was you go sit down with the coach. You have a man-to-man conversation. You don't tweet him. You don't text him. You go talk to the guy. And the coach is going to tell you, well, let's work this out. Now, no coach wants a guy on their team that's unhappy. But at least have that conversation. Now all you have to do is go to the compliance office, and in 48 hours, they get to put it up on this portal. That's their job. That's the rule. And then anybody in the country can call you. So they're getting calls. As a matter of fact, I was just in Lubbock, and their top quarterback, their number one quarterback, is leaving. And I saw him. He happened to stop by and see my daughter because she graduated from Texas Tech. And I saw him, and he said to me, I already heard from 5 schools. He just got on the portal. So, I mean, it's a thing to me that – It's holding coaches hostage. And college basketball coaches, assistants, they don't need to go recruit. What do they need to do? They just look. It's like eHarmony.
Okay.
I mean, seriously, you just look there. Oh, this guy. Here's his phone number. I'm going to call him. It's like Tinder for basketball.
I'm not a fan. You want to step up here and fight the other side?
Well,
since you're very – I'm not going to say you're anti-coach. You're anti the NCAA establishment. And you're very pro-player.
Correct. And I think – in this specific instance, in the case that we're talking about with the transfer portal, I probably fall more in line with what Joe's saying from the standpoint I would treat it as a case-by-case basis, and unfortunately, you can't do that. The last time we had this conversation, it was surrounding Tate Martell.
It was Tate Martell.
And
we screamed and yelled, what did we tell you?
Well, in hindsight...
I'm generally pro-player, but I told you, Tate Martell has a lot of baggage. Yeah. And, man, it didn't work out at Miami, and now has he come back from his leave? It's like this mysterious leave.
Right.
But this is where I'm going to fight, John, on
fight
this show.
Let's go.
Because, one, you just joked about the back end with the Match.com or the eHarmony. Then the other coaches, you know, you can put a stop to this. Stop, coaches. Step up. You're supposed to be the examples. Then don't dip into the transfer portal. Turn all the kids down. But you know you're not going to do that because you're going to play the game. But here's the other part of it. You mentioned... hey, just go talk to the coach. There were way too many cases in the past, Joe, where a kid went and talked to the coach, and the coach got vindictive and goes, you know what, you can transfer. Here's 54 schools you can't go to. So you made your own bed.
Yeah.
Maybe not you. You're not a jerk.
No.
But there are coaches out there that were jerks, so they had to try to do this so that kids aren't afraid to go and potentially explore opportunities and not be intimidated by their current coach.
And I agree with some of that. I don't think you can eliminate a kid after they – leave your school. I can think the conference rules, a lot of conferences only do that, but I definitely think that's a problem. But, you know, school administrators want retention. They want kids to stay in school. They don't want the student. And there's an AD out in the West Coast out here that said, well, I think it's important because it has students are treated like student-athletes. Student-athletes are treated like students. Mm-hmm. If they want to leave, they can leave. Well, last time I checked, regular students on campus aren't wearing all this gear. They're not eating training table. They're not getting free tutoring. They're not being, you know, taken to the Bahamas to play in a tournament. So I think it is a different scenario there. But it's all about retention. And I got in big trouble. I'm the head coach at Angelo State. I was mad at my team. I had a warm-up made, and on the back it said, play hard or transfer. Sure enough, I was in a president's office the next day.
Is that right?
And they never wore those shirts again. So I think retention's important. I just think that if you're going to do this, it's got to be fair. Joel and Tomboy should be playing at Texas Tech. If some kids can play and some kids can't play, I think it should be even all the way through. I don't think it's consistent. A kid at Wisconsin, Michigan State, you can go on and on and on. It's got to be consistent if we're going to do it, and I think we need to go ahead and take a really good look at it.
The crew over at Finley Toyota speak Spanish, Thai, and even Persian. In fact, they speak 14 different languages. Come in and talk the universal language of big savings today. Now, back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Big Day College Basketball Talk, Joe Esposito with his weekly spot. He's in. Ryan McKinnell's here. It's Cofield. Ari as well. I'm going to throw out one last thing about the transfer portal. In terms of the coaches who complain about it, then you've also got to show some discipline. That discipline is not the right word. I would like to see coaches call out the violators. Like you just said, a college football player puts his name in the portal, has five offers right away. You know, Joe, that there are schools out there that will call on players even before they're in the portal. Well, then, hey, you know, I know snitching's not popular, and maybe it'll come back on you. Maybe that's what people are worried about. But other schools have to police the violators who are recruiting straight off of other rosters.
Did other coaches actually call those kids, or did their AAU coach or their handler or their
like
mother's
connection at one school to connection at another?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what happens a lot of times. Or an agent, or who knows who's calling who. I mean, it's an interesting deal. I mean, you never know who's doing what behind your back. But it's happened to me. I mean, I've seen it at the highest level where we've lost kids, and all of a sudden, boom, they show up on another team's bench. So you never know how that's going to go. But you're right. It's an interesting deal. And I wish coaches would do that and call people out, because some of them need to be called out.
We have a chance to talk to Larry Kostowiak here with Joe Esposito and Cofield and McKinnell. How you doing, Coach?
Doing good. What did I miss? Well, you guys are talking about calling people out.
Well,
make sure it's not me.
Yeah, I know, right? It's a weird way to start an interview. We were talking about the transfer portal because Joe was railing on the transfer portal. And, you know, it's weird now with coaches. You not only have to worry about getting your team ready for the second half of the season, the conference play, you got to make sure they're getting things done academically, but then you also kind of have to look around your roster and you're like, wait a second, is someone unhappy? Am I going to be surprised here in a couple of days by a name in the transfer portal?
Yeah, there's no doubt. There's a lot of moving parts, you know, and kids want to play, you know, and I think any freshman will tell you in college, you know, maybe with the exception of the elite guys, that college, the adjustment to college is really hard. You know, for a lot of kids are super successful through AAU and high school programs, and then they get to college and it's just another step up, and it's kind of like the rite of passage, and you know it's got to deal with some adversity, and I think some kids maybe have never dealt with that. You know, it's always different. Each kid that wants to leave is a different story, but I do think we've gotten away from the good old days where you just kind of dig in and take your knocks and grow and develop as a player. You know, I think of Kyle Kuzma, who we had in our program, had a, you know, really difficult, didn't even play as a freshman, hardly played as a sophomore, started killing people as a junior and got his degree and left. And it was, you know, a trajectory that's not normal, but you got to trust the process. And I think nowadays it's kind of like, you know, I got to take my talents to some other beach and go try it somewhere else. And it's definitely made it challenging.
Coach, one of those guys that Kuz killed was us. I can remember we took that plane ride with you to Puerto Rico. That was one of our favorite trips. You know, the coach was such a good guy. He drove his plane to Lubbock, Texas, picked us up, and took us all to Puerto Rico. And it actually was a good experience for our both teams. It was a fun time. Hey, talking about freshmen.
It sure was.
Is your Ryland Jones, is he going to be back?
Not sure. It's kind of a touch-and-go deal. You know, he's as tough as nails. So we don't want to put him in harm's way. And done a great job for us. He's a super poised kid and just has a steadying influence on the game and certainly our team. So we're hopeful, but a little bit uncertain at this point.
Coach, I absolutely love your team. I mean, you guys got a young team. I don't know if people out there know, but you have no seniors on scholarship. You have one junior on scholarship, and your leading scorer, Timmy Allen, at 20 points a game is a sophomore. Boots,
yep,
a sophomore at 11 points a game. Your freshman's at 11 points a game, and Riley is at 10 points a game. I mean, you're a young team, a great, exciting young team. How's it been coaching a bunch of young guys this first year?
You know what? It's we're on the bus right now heading to the hotel, and I just love this group. You know, more so probably than any group I've ever been with, to be honest with you.
Wow, that's great.
You know, it's just I think we've got 10 guys on the squad, last count, with all A's or B's, so they get the academic piece. We never, as a coaching staff, are starting a meeting and looking around trying to figure out where so-and-so is, you know, and they work their butts off, and it's kind of what we all signed up for, you know, and they're just high-character kids, and they're young. As somebody told me the other day, there's only one team in America that's younger. I didn't realize that, out of every Division I team. So, you know, I think with putting a lot of effort and emphasis in teaching, and the guys are absorbing it. We're still making mistakes, but for the most part, they're not making the same mistakes. And I think it bodes well for the future when you think about, you know, having a nice nucleus returning consistently for a few years here. So, you know, I think the future is bright as well as the present.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, Coach, one of the things, I don't know how happy your fans are about your schedule, because you only have five conference games, I guess non-conference games at home. It's the lowest you've had since 1969. But I commend you on these neutral site games, so you can play a team like Kentucky. You can play a team like San Diego State, both being ranked teams. I mean, scheduling is becoming an issue, isn't it, with these home-and-homes?
It's really hard. You know, it's rare, and especially when you're on the West Coast. You know, and the lion's share of teams are in the eastern two-thirds of the country. You know, so to crank up a home-and-home with somebody and have them jump on a plane and maybe, you know, 4 hours, 6 hours, whatever the trip is, doesn't make a whole lot of sense when there's a lot more candidates, you know, within a stone's throw from them. So, you know, it's complicated a little bit for us. But I do like the neutral site games. You know, we played in a tournament in Myrtle Beach. We didn't play particularly well, but it's great for our team and bonding to get away. And this trip is great. We flew in here just now, and we'll spend a few days together and bus to L.A. to play San Diego State. And you have a little, we've got a great family feeling. And when you're around the holidays, I think everybody knows that they get to spend time with their families.
No question. Talking about families, Coach, one of those young guys on your team is your son. And we were talking to Fran McCaffrey about coaching his boys. How's it been coaching your son, and how's your marriage? Is it all right?
Well, I think one of the analogies that made a lot of sense to me when it comes to coaching your kids is it becomes kind of a no-brainer when your kid is really good or really bad, because either everybody knows he needs to be on the court or everybody knows he should be on the bench. And our son Luke right now that's with us is as a young man that didn't really get caught up in the recruiting circles. He had a bunch of knee tendonitis, so we've got him in great care with our training staff, and it's just good to see him on a daily basis. That's probably the most powerful part about it.
We got the Neon Hoop Showcase benefiting Coaches versus Cancer going down tomorrow night, 8 o'clock start at T-Mobile right here in Las Vegas. It's Kentucky against Utah, and we're talking to the Utes coach, Larry Kostowiak. I was going to say, the other part of playing at T-Mobile, it's a bonus for you guys to come down here for neutral site games. You're going to have to be here playing in March anyway.
Exactly. Yeah, when it was first proposed to us by Kentucky to play, they wanted the return game. They're never going to play a home-and-home with anybody other than Kansas and Duke. So we got our butts whipped last year at Lexington, and they wanted to play at Madison Square Garden, and we got them to play here at T-Mobile, which obviously makes a little more sense for us. So. We've got to get some reps under our belt in this building and get ready for our tournament. I think that's all helpful.
Well, Kentucky's good, like really good. So there's going to be some intensity, but we got to go back a couple of weeks. I don't know if most people down here got wind of just how intense and crazy your game against BYU was. I mean, that would, you know, in the end, you wound up losing the game, but geez, talk about prepping in a rivalry spot for what's going to happen the rest of the season. That game was nuts.
Yeah, we got down early in that ball game, 16 points, and stayed in the fight. We actually ended up winning in overtime, but it was a heck of an evening for us in a big in-state game, obviously. And the BYU team's good, man. They got five seniors on their squad that have played a lot of college basketball, a really good shooting team. And then it was Yoli Child's first game back for the Cougars, and he's one of the better big men in the country. So we had our hands full, but just super proud of our guys. It was quite an environment, and we battled, and I don't believe we were ever ahead until overtime. So, you know, we got lucky, a little bit lucky with fouling out one of their players, and Big Yoli got cramps. But, you know, it's better to be, what do they say, better to be lucky than good. So that was a good win for our program.
What do you expect from Kentucky?
Well, it's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of athletes. You know, they get up and down. You can't turn the ball over, and you got to block out. They really feast on some of the easy ones in transition. I've never seen teams score quite as fast. Where I'm trying to do clips of it, and a lot of times it's 27 seconds on the shot clock when they're scoring. So you know, you got to get shots. You gotta you can't turn it over because they'll kill you. Last year we played at Lexington, and they had 38 points in transition and off of our 18 turnovers. So. You know, they're hard enough to defend without that being brought into the mix. So you got to be solid on both sides of the ball. And, you know, they're big and athletic, as is usual, but they do have a young team. So we're ready to rock. I think Kentucky's played 8 straight home games, so they haven't, short of their first game of the year where they got a win, I believe, out in New York. But, you know, it's going to be a heck of a test for us heading before league play starts. We got two really good teams that we're about to play, and then we'll have a little break before Pac-12 play starts.
Coach, we appreciate it. We're glad you're part of another Coaches versus Cancer outing in this game against Kentucky, and thanks for the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really, really happy to be a part of the whole event, and great to be in Vegas, and I appreciate you guys reaching out. So
Coach,
happy
thanks.
Holidays to everybody.
Thanks, Coach. Say hi to your wife.
Will do. Thanks,
all right,
Joe.
Buddy.
See you, man. Bye.
There you go. Patrick Stobiak. Joe Esposito, of course, trying to what was that question about the wife, the marriage?
Hope his marriage is okay. You know, oh. I was lucky enough that my kids couldn't play at Licka Hoop.
Oh, you meant with the kids, because the mom will get all mad if the kids don't play.
Yeah, you come home, your kids don't play.
I do stuff like that. I just wanted to – I feel like I'm usually the awkward one. So I was like, let me just explain to the audience what he was doing there.
Well, yeah.
Kasovia, you know, got it. He got it.
Yeah, well, yeah, he got it. He understood. You know, you don't want to hurt your marriage over your son not playing. I mean, his kid hasn't played a minute yet.
Right.
I mean, if he came home, the dinner would be burned if I was the wife.
He kind of mocked on the kid a little bit there. He's like, well, he's either not good enough to play or he's really good. So basically, I'm not getting any guff because, you know, he's on the team, but no one's screaming at me that he has to play.
At least he was honest.
He was honest.
You know, that's the key thing. He's a great interview, great guy. I mean, he's a good guy. He played a lot of years in the NBA, and he's a good coach. I've seen his teams a lot, scouted against his teams, and hopefully they'll have a good game this weekend.
Give us 5 more minutes, okay? Stick around. Joe Zito's here. And we want to get into what's going on at T-Mobile with this game, what's going on this weekend, and some of the other big games this week around the country.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews. Now, back to Cofield and Company.
But baby, it's cold outside.
Love that.
I know, that's why I keep playing it. It's our generation that loves it. 40 days of Baby It's Cold Outside rolling on. All right, Joe, we got like 6 minutes left. We have a ton of college basketball games to get through. Joe Esposito's here. We just got done talking to Larry Kostoviak from Utah. Boy, talk about aggressive scheduling. He's got some games coming up here. He's got Kentucky tomorrow night at T-Mobile. You think they have a shot?
You know, I do. I do think they have a shot. You know, I listened to Calipari today talk about his team's defense has been terrible, and he's really working on the two F words, fight and finish.
Okay.
I don't know
what
those
sure,
are.
Sure, he's using another F word all the time to get him to fight and finish.
I don't know what he's using over there, but he's definitely trying to finish and fight. But I think it's going to be a good game. It's going to be a really test of young players to see who can handle the adversity and, you know, playing in a neutral site and That'll be interesting. But then they got to go play San Diego State in L.A. in the Staples Center.
Number three team in the country.
The net
rankings, yes.
I'm not a net. We can talk about that just like the porta potty, but you know.
What's your problem with the net?
My problem with the net is like Baylor. I mean, when you look at the net and you think about Ohio State is number one, okay? And they're 9-1, and Baylor's 8-1. Okay, so it's about similar. But Baylor's got a better strength of schedule, 39. Ohio State's 48. Baylor's got a better non-conference strength schedule. They're at 36, and Ohio State's at 63. And then quadrant one wins. Baylor has the most of the country at 3. So I really believe that Baylor should be number one. So scratch the net. We're calling it the Jet.
What does that mean?
Joe, Jet, Jay, no.
It's better than those. You're going to come up with your own formula?
Yeah, my own formula, the Jet.
Wouldn't it be the...
The brand is strong, Steve.
Wouldn't it be the Jeet?
We call it the Jeet. We call it whatever you want to
call it. Well,
it's J-E.
Are you not going to put your last name
on it? T-S, Jets.
No, different. This is Jeet.
Oh, okay, my bad. But anyway.
Solid comedy on all parts.
Let's just get off that kick.
Can San Diego State beat Utah?
San Diego State is playing with a lot of confidence, man. When they made that shot against San Jose with three guys.
Which, by the way, how incredible was that?
That was awesome.
They struggled that badly. And then poor San Jose State, that guy just needs, you know, one. Well, they already did get a good win across country, but he just needs to get some breaks to get that thing moving forward. That team's actually played kind of tough this year.
He took over a mess, and he's done a good job. Yeah. He has some good recruits in there. He's done a good job, and he is going to beat one of those big teams in the Mountain West. He's going to catch somebody. But I think San Diego's rolling. They got a lot of belief right now. They're a top 25, so I think there's going to be a good game.
And that game's at Staples.
Yeah,
that's a neutral game. LSU is playing USC that night at Staples, along with Utah and San Diego State.
That'd be a great night of basketball.
All right. Around the country, tonight we got Oklahoma and Creighton. What do you think of this one?
Well, you know, I think it's a good game. I mean, Oklahoma's coming off a loss. They just lost to Wichita State. I happened to watch that game. I got a former guy I worked with on the Oklahoma staff, and Doolittle had a great night. And man, I'm telling you, it's going to be an interesting game. I think that Creighton's got the guards. I think they have the guards that can do a great job, and I don't think Oklahoma's guards are as good. But Oklahoma then again has the big guys inside that bang and, you know, Austin Reeves is at 17 points a game. So I think they're going to cause some problems for Oklahoma. I'm going to take Creighton. I think Creighton's going to win that game, to be honest with you, and I think that they'll cover. I saw the little thing talking about ATS and, you know, something. I didn't know what ATS meant. I thought there was something about the four-wheeler or something. I didn't know what ATS was. But then I realized.
You know now.
Now I know. I live in Vegas.
You got to know it now.
Now I know what
against
ATS
the spread.
Means.
Come on now.
So anyway, I think that's going to be a great game tonight, and that's really the only big feature game of tonight's.
How good is Gonzaga? They're number two in the country. I keep hearing people say, hey, they're not the team they were the last couple of years, but they're number two in the country. Again, they're taking on North Carolina without Cole Anthony. That's tomorrow night.
Well, I think Gonzaga is good, but they don't schedule anybody. I mean, their non-conference strength of schedule is 276. And their regular strength of schedule is 277. Now, granted, they do have three quadrant wins, just like Baylor does, and they are 11-1, and their first team to get to 11 wins.
But they have played a weird schedule.
They played a weird schedule.
Of Arkansas Pine Bluffs, but then they also have wins now against Oregon, Washington, and Arizona.
It's going to be interesting. And why is their strength of schedule so low? I mean, they must really play some really bad,
right. You
know, talking 300 guys. So it's going to be interesting to see how they go from here and if they can continue and, you know, like, this is it's wide open this year. We know how wide open college basketball is. There's so much parity, and that's going to make this NCAA tournament just incredible to watch this year.
Utah State has a nice test out of the Mountain West Conference in Sunrise, so going to go south against the Gators. That's a Saturday afternoon game.
Yes.
And Cates is back, the big man.
Yeah, and he's back, and Florida's not playing great. They're kind of up and down, inconsistent. You know, we talked about Blackshear last week, And so, you know, I think Utah State definitely got a chance to win that game. It'd be good for the Mountain West if they could pull that one off.
That doubleheader here on Saturday, again, more college basketball at T-Mobile. What do you think of Ohio State and Kentucky?
Ohio State and Kentucky. I mean, Ohio State has had a tough loss against Minnesota. You know, that's a tough place to play in a barn. I mean, you go up the stairs and your feet are frozen. But when you get warmed up and you get going, that's a cold building, boy, the barn. And they got the fans out there and
by the way, everyone in the Big Ten, I think, except for one team, is 1-1.
Really?
And a home team has not lost yet.
That's incredible, because when you remember when the Mountain West started, I don't know if a home team won except for one. So, you know, it's so up and down. But I think that Ohio State is really a good team. They did lose the last game, but I think they're a team that can definitely compete.
Last one. Yeah, we mentioned North Carolina, Blue Blood struggling. What's going on with UCLA?
You know, UCLA has got 7 wins, 1 against Division II. You know, their best win of the year is against Santa Barbara. I mean, that's a team that's 5-3. You know, and in the net, they're 179. All their other wins, Long Beach, UNLV, Southern Utah, San Jose, and Denver. I mean, they're not high-level net wins. And then they just lost. You know, they lost that game to Hofstra. That was 202 in the net. So I think UCLA is struggling. And one thing about them, you know, they're dead last in the Pac-12 and RPI. And, you know, I think it's going to take him a little time. He's got a point guard that he can build around, but it's going to take...
Look at the rest of the team, though. And they played really well against UNLV, but they shot out of their minds from three. The roster isn't built like a Cronin team, and I wonder how he's going to build his teams now that he can get top 100 guys. But when you looked out there...
They didn't have that grit.
Well, but that's the thing. You have bigs who want to play the three. Like, I really like the talent of Chris Smith. I'm an amazing athlete, great skills at 6'9". But there are times you're like, man, you are drifting outside way too much. You're not grinding like he's going to want you to.
No doubt. And that's what Coach Cronin's about. He's about getting those big, tough inside guys. And we played him against Cincinnati just a year ago when I was at Memphis. And he's going to play those. He's going to play the big lineup where they're going to just grind you. They're going to screen you. They're going to play that aggressive style. And he just doesn't have those pieces right now. He's trying to do everything he can to win games. He is sitting at 7-4. But I think in the future, his program is definitely going to go on a rise.
A bunch of basketball games this week at T-Mobile, so make sure you get out there and check them out, especially tomorrow night. It's for Coaches versus Cantor. And again, thanks to Utah coach Larry Kostowiak for joining us as they're going to take on Kentucky. Joe, good spot. We'll figure out something for next week. We've got the holidays coming up. So, but basketball, you know, there's still basketball.
Let's do it. We can do something next week. You know, I can wear my Santa suit.
I thought you were going to wear it today.
I was going to wear it today, but I felt weird about wearing it today, you know. So I figured, but you know, obviously you have nothing with Santa on. You don't have nothing on. Your Christmas balls are gone.
I know, the Christmas balls are gone. I had something, I forgot to put it on.
But you put Rutgers on. I mean, that's even better.
That was a good way to close the hour. I like that. All right, Joe, we'll see you.
All right.
Finley Toyota. They'll do anything to sell you a car. No Toyota problem is too tough, too large, or too small. Keep your Toyota running like a Toyota.